The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Good afternoon. We're going to get started. We wanted to wait a couple minutes for folks who are transitioning out of other classes, but I am Professor Cynthia Jones, and this is...
Professor Robbins.
We both teach in the CRIM area, and I teach...
Professor Jones is a former student of mine.
I wasn't going to bring it up. Make him seem rather senior. Not only am I a graduate of the law school and a former student of Professor Robbins, he's the reason I came to this law school. He gave a presentation at my undergrad at the University of Delaware, and I was so inspired I came down and looked at the law school, and I eventually came. So, yes, he's the wind beneath my wings. But. But anyway, we want to give you guys some advice, but we largely want this to be a session for you to get information from us on what you are interested in. So we're going to give you a little bit of information on what we think in terms of academic advising, and then hear from you about your specific questions. And both of us have office hours, so if you wanted to talk to us one-on-one after this session, my office hours generally are Tuesday and Thursday from 5 to 6. Or by appointment. So if either I have a lot of students outside, and this is the time of year where I have a lot of students, I can come in. I'm actually going to be here this Monday for most of the day as well. So if you want to email me, easy enough to do. You can find me on the website at CE Jones, and then the usual at WCL right there. How many of your office hours?
My office hours are Sunday at midnight. we're all up then.
So. I know, he's like, works for me.
Just send me an email, we'll say something.
Okay. So I'll get started and talk a little bit about the CRIM law curriculum at the Washington College of Law. There, beyond the basic course, you're required to take CRIM law. And how many of you are one else? Everybody's one. Okay. So you're trying to take CRIM law, you're taking that now. In the fall, you will take criminal procedure, and that's a required course. Criminal procedure is not like civil procedure, although you would think it would be, where you're looking at different rules in a code book. In criminal procedure, it's an extension of constitutional law, and you're studying essentially in all criminal procedure courses, Fourth and Fifth Amendment cases. And it comes down to the courses about restricting the power of the government to investigate crimes. What are the constitutional restrictions? So I teach criminal procedure. It's taught by Professor Davis and Professor Taslitz. We're the three tenured full-time faculty members who teach it. I understand it's also going to be taught by a professor who's been out this year, Professor Kittry, and then it'll be taught by some adjuncts who are not full-time here on the faculty. So you'll take criminal procedure in the fall, and most of the sessions, almost all of them, are 1:30 to 2:20, or 2:50, 1:30 to 2:20, either Monday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Thursday, so pretty much no matter who you take, you'll be taking it at that time. And it's also offered over the summer if you wanted to take it early. Beyond criminal procedure, a course you should absolutely take, and I don't say this just because I teach it, is evidence. Evidence is a prerequisite for a lot of other courses. If you're interested in criminal law, you pretty much are going to have to take evidence, and I would advise you to take it early. I'm not teaching evidence in the fall. I am teaching it next spring, but it's offered every semester, and it's offered over the summer. I actually taught evidence once over the summer. And I would discourage people from taking evidence over the summer. It is an incredibly dense course with lots of rules, and it's hard, especially if you want to go in this area, to absorb it in that compressed amount of time. You can do it if you want to do a moot court or mock trial. Maybe it's in your best advantage to do it. If you have the option, I would say wait and take it over the course of a whole semester. In trial ad right now, which I imagine if you're interested in criminal law, you're going to end up in taking trial ad, evidence is a co-requisite. So you don't have to take it in advance. You can take it while you're taking the course. I'm not personally a big fan of that. I think you should have evidence before you take trial ad, but having said that, because students come and say, you know, half the course, there are all these hearsay problems, but we haven't covered hearsay yet. Like, that's why you should have evidence first. But my students who are in trial ad while they're taking evidence have said, actually, it's helped because I'm applying the rule as we're learning it, and it's sort of sticking. Even notwithstanding that, I think it's better to have had evidence fully, and then you can go in, because you're in the class with people who've had evidence. So it's kind of your disadvantage. So that's my thought, that at a minimum, you should take evidence sooner rather than later, definitely in your second year. It is a prerequisite for some of the clinics, and it's a prerequisite, or should be, for some of the trial ad courses. So even beyond the basic trial ad course, there are advanced trial ad courses that you should absolutely consider taking, like pretrial litigation and objections, and you need evidence for that. You don't want to be in a position where you're trying to take those courses and you haven't had evidence for taking it at the same time. So definitely in your second year, preferably in the fall, but no later than the spring semester, you should take evidence, and that opens the door for many of the upper level courses. I'll say one more thing and then I'll turn it over for Ira to talk a little bit, and that is about your upper level writing requirement. All students are required after their first year, after you've completed writing, to take to complete a minimum 30-page paper that is of publishable quality. So you don't, if you're on a journal, then you can use your journal paper and have a professor supervise you. That's one way to complete your upper level writing requirement, which you also want to try to complete in your second year to get that out of the way. You can do it as part of a seminar. There are many seminar courses where you have to write a paper, and either the paper requirement for the course is 30 pages, or you can talk to the professor and say, can I complete my upper level? And they can say, well, write 10 more pages than are required, and I'll certify your upper level as having been completed. Or you can do an independent study with a professor. If there's a particular area that you're interested in, and there's not a seminar that would cover that, you can go to a professor. For example, last summer I supervised two students who were doing their upper level papers on search and seizure and dogs and use of technology and cell phones to track people, and I supervised their upper level paper because it was an area that I knew research in that I was interested in. And so they met their requirement through a hike in the being a two-credit independent study. So that those are the basics. After first year criminal law, you have a required criminal procedure course in the fall that everybody will take. You can take that over the summer. I think it's perfectly fine to take it over the summer. I think Liz Bowles, who runs our trial ad program and who is a former public defender, a practitioner, she teaches it, I believe, over the summer. She's very good. And then evidence, and try to get either in a seminar course where you can complete your upper level, or at a minimum get with one of the criminal law professors who could supervise you doing an independent study and try to get your upper level completed in your second year. So those are, I think, the fundamentals. And then Professor Robbins, who may disagree with me, can elaborate on some of the other things.
Well, we agree on most things. We, as you might expect, disagree on some things. If you go to the entire criminal law faculty, you'll get a variety of opinions with a fair amount of overlap. Probably the single most important thing you need to hear today is that, with a small exception, there's no necessary sequencing of courses in the criminal area. There might be in other areas, like in the business area, but here, not so much. Having said that, though, I would say, unless you're going to take any courses over the summer, the single most important package to take early on is Criminal Procedure 1 and Evidence. I would recommend that you take both of those in the first semester. I completely agree that with Professor Jones that it makes no sense to take evidence as a co-requisite with trial advocacy, criminal or civil, or even clinics allow it as a co-requisite. That makes no sense. So if you're interested in criminal litigation, you should get evidence out of the way as soon as possible, and that's likely to be first semester, second year. So first semester, take CrimPro 1 and evidence. I'll fill in other courses maybe in a bit. Second semester, I would recommend highly that you take CrimPro 2. It's offered every spring. by a husband and wife team. Both are judges. Gary Baer is a trial court judge in Maryland, former prosecutor and former defender. Mary Ellen Barbera is a judge on the highest court of Maryland. This court, the CrimPro 1, which is required for next semester, is constitutional criminal procedure. Professor Jones and other wonderful teachers teach that course. Fourth, Fifth, Sixth Amendment, by and large, and of that, by and large, Fourth Amendment. CrimPro 2 is non-constitutional criminal procedure. Bail, sentencing, grand jury issues, some people call it as a shorthand the bail-to-jail course, although Professor Jones and I might call it the bail-to-freedom course. Yeah. It depends on your perspective. You'll also take ethics in your second semester of your 2L year. That's a requirement. So basically, if you take CrimPro 1 and evidence first semester, and CrimPro 2 and ethics the second semester, that's your foundation. Everything else you can build in around that. We probably disagree a little bit on the extent to which you should overemphasize criminal courses too early. I think it would be a mistake to have CrimPro 1 evidence and two other crim courses next semester. It's my opinion, and people disagree, and rightfully so. It's my opinion that before you can become a good criminal lawyer, or international lawyer, or any kind of lawyer, you should have the courses that will help to make you a good lawyer generally. So that it's my sense that all law students should take what I call the non-required courses, evidence, business associations, and federal personal income tax. I would add to that, however, if you're interested in criminal law, that sometime before you graduate, not necessarily next semester, not necessarily second year, you should take federal courts. A very important course, because a lot of these issues that start in the state end up in federal court, and a lot of these issues, if you're prosecuting as a U.S. attorney or you're a federal defender, these issues will start and stay in federal court. Other courses that you might not think are obvious criminal courses, you might call them criminal law related courses, I would put the following ones on the list. That is to say, people courses rather than institution courses. I'd say family law could be very important. Immigration law, First Amendment, domestic violence, juvenile justice, and even state constitutional law. Now, Professor Jones has mentioned the upper class writing requirement, which is not that hard to satisfy, and she recommends that you take it in your second year. I'm a little bit looser on that. I recommend that you take it at any time except in your last semester of law school, meaning you can take it first semester, third year as well. You are required to have at least 86 credits to graduate, which means after your first year, another 57 credits. Even if you satisfied all 86 credits but haven't finished your upper class writing requirement, you cannot graduate. So you don't want to leave it for your last semester, because if for some reason you get sick or there's some family hardship or something and you cannot finish that paper, then you can't graduate. So aim to take it not later than first semester of second year. Of third year, thank you. Let's see, what else? You are allowed to take, and most students don't know that. Most faculty don't know that. Any student in the law school is allowed to take up to 6 credits worth of courses, graduate level courses from the main campus. You will get the credit. Someone in the law school has to approve it, but by and large, you will get the credit. The grade will not be a part of your GPA, so in effect, it's pass-fail. So you might find some good criminal law drug policy courses there, but typically the registrar comes to me to decide whether to approve a course in the criminal law area, and I've approved graduate-level Spanish courses for people who want to practice criminal law. So if you're going to practice in New York or in Southern California, Miami, Texas, or something like that, kind of think about brushing up on your Spanish skills?
Actually, anywhere, even in the District of Columbia, you're going to have clients who are Spanish-speaking, and it is an asset to whether you're a prosecutor and you're talking to witnesses who've been victims of crime, or whether you're a public defender and you're representing someone who speaks only Spanish. It's an asset to the office, and it will be, you know, it's a choice between you and another person, and you speak Spanish, that could be the edge in you getting the job.
Absolutely true. Just one or two other points, and then maybe you'll want to follow up, and then we'll open it up for questions. How do you decide from among the rich variety of criminal law courses we have which ones to take? And we do have wonderful courses, wonderful teachers on the full-time faculty, on the adjunct faculty. I noticed this morning, just before I came in here, from the course roster for next semester, that the first course to close out was white-collar crime. And it's typically the first course to close out, very popular course, very popular adjunct professor. Watch for white-collar crime, watch for other criminal-related courses, but another way to look at this is don't focus so much on the doctrine, on the title of the course, focus on the professor. We have wonderful adjuncts, wonderful full-time faculty. Follow the professor. Learn how the professor thinks. Learn about the professor's worldview. Learn about how the professor approaches issues in criminal law. That in itself, I think, may go even further than taking a particular course because of the doctrine that's covered. And just one other point, well, two other points. One is externships. Externships in criminal law, I think, are the single most important thing that will help you get a job in criminal law. And I didn't think this as recently as 2 weeks ago. But Professor Jones and I had a group dinner with a bunch of adjunct faculty in the criminal law area last Monday, and they persuaded me that they look for people who have taken the externships, who have had the hands-on experience. More so than anything else, that will tip the balance. Doesn't mean you have to take it next semester. In fact, I'd probably discourage you from taking it next semester. Get some of the foundational courses out of the way. But after that, focus on externships, whether it's second semester and summer and third year, or you have different externships in the criminal law area, strongly consider that. Undoubtedly, you'll be thinking about doing clinic in your third year. And I have to say, however important clinic is, from what my sense from our dinner last week was that the externship can be much more important. And my final point is work for a criminal law professor. Each of us gets a Dean's Fellow. Sometimes we get more than one. Work for a criminal law professor. Do writing in the area of criminal law under a model teacher's supervision.
So I was going to do a few things, but one thing I was going to do is tell them about the full-time criminal professors. So I don't need to tell them about you. You can tell them a little bit about your background and what you research in, so they can figure out which of us they, you know, want to try to work for either over the summer, this coming summer, or in the fall. You want to tell them a little bit about you?
Yeah, but I'll preface it by saying I've already hired for the summer, so we're not talking about the summer. I do a lot of things, but I wouldn't say I'm either prosecutor or defender. I would say my focus is post-conviction, habeas corpus, cleaning up other people's messes, so to speak. You've heard of innocence clinics. Let's focus on getting people out of prison who were actually factually innocent. Well, my focus has been legal innocence, that is to say, getting people out who may factually be guilty, but who, well, not necessarily out, getting retried, people who may be factually guilty, but there were constitutional errors. And if there were not the constitutional error, the person might not have been convicted. I don't want to say that my focus has been on the equivalent of running a guilt project, get guilty people out, but rather make sure that guilty people have constitutionally fair trials and sentences. But my writing is less on the criminal procedure side and more on the substantive criminal law side.
Professor Robbins understates his credentials. He is one of the foremost authorities in the country on post-conviction prisoners' rights. He's written literally the book on that area. So if you're interested in post-conviction and the treatment of prisoners and how what process processes are available to challenge a conviction, you should come by and talk to Professor Robbins. You should seriously consider taking his advanced criminal law course, where you do a lot of writing in that area, and you should contact him after the summer about being a Dean's Fellow that is doing research with him. You guys know what Dean's Fellows are? So each professor over the summer and during the academic year have at a minimum 20 research hours. We can divide them, and we usually do. We hire two students. Each student does 10 hours a week, and you're paid by the law school on an hourly basis. So I want to tell you a little bit about the criminal law professors. So when you're looking at courses, you can make an informed decision about what makes the most sense. And I also want to tell you a little bit about what areas we research in, so you can, again, in terms of affinity, figure out, like, who do I need to talk to? So first I'll start with me. I graduated from here. I clerked. I worked for a big firm doing white-collar crime for a little while in D.C., and I was the director of the D.C. Public Defender Service. A lot of the work I do, and a lot of the research I do, is on primarily two topics. One, wrongful convictions, how to prevent them, and what mechanisms should be put in place to prevent them in our criminal justice system. And the other area is racial disparities in the criminal justice system. So those are my two primary areas of focus. I am actively in the process of hiring Dean's Fellows. The applications are due by the 15th of this month. So if you're interested, you can email me. So that's what I do. Angela Davis is another criminal law professor, excellent, another mentor of mine. She was also the director of the D.C. Public Defender Service. When I was in law school, she supervised my externship when I was there. I usually don't bring that up because then she feels old. But, of course, as we know, that would make her old. But anyway, she's not here, I can say that. Her research focuses on prosecutorial accountability. She's written, literally, the book on power and the discretion of prosecutors and how it can be wielded in a way that's unfair or wielded in a way that's more fair, but that there should be checks and balances about that. So that's the area where she does a lot of research. And of course, like me, her background is as a career public defender. Another full-time professor is Andrew Taslitz. Professor Taslitz is new to WCL, but taught for a couple of decades over at Howard University. He was a former federal prosecutor and spent a good deal of time prosecuting blue-collar crime and a little bit of white-collar crime. And he does a lot of research on a wide range of areas, but a lot in the area of the Fourth Amendment, searches and seizures and the restrictions on the police, eyewitness misidentification and things like that. So Professor Taslitz, and then the final full-time people would be Professor Jenny Roberts. Jenny Roberts teaches in our criminal justice clinic. Outside the clinic, she teaches one seminar on plea bargaining. So she's not teaching the foundational courses, criminal law, criminal procedure. And then we have a professor named Nicholas Kittrey. Professor Kittrey was my criminal law professor way back when, and he's been on leave. He may or may not be back next year. But for any of the professors, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can go online, the students can, and check course evaluations.
Absolutely.
And you should do that. You should go online to MyAU, right? Or
MyWCL.
And look at the course evaluations for those professors and see how your fellow classmates have rated them. You can talk to upper-level students, but just go and check and see what folks think of them. We do have the advantage of being a criminal law faculty as a collective group getting pretty good course evaluations and recommendations from students. So I think you're pretty safe in the criminal law area. Outside of crim, I also agree with Ira that you need to absolutely take what's generally called the big box courses. There are four big box courses. Those are the four credit code courses that are generally tougher. Evidence, we've already talked about, that's one of them. Business associations is one, that's the basic business course. I had absolutely no interest in business, and I knew absolutely nothing about business, even though I was from Delaware, where everything, as you now know, is incorporated. But business associations is a foundational course. It's on the bar. As any lawyer who graduated from law school, you need to have some foundational knowledge of business. The other one is a tax, federal personal income tax. Everybody in your family is going to come to you once they know you're a lawyer, probably they already have, and say, you know, can I write this off? Can I whatever? He said, I'm not a tax lawyer. I know some basic stuff about tax, and you should. And the other one, that again, I say this with full disclosure that it's, you know, I opted not to take this course, but wills, trusts, and estates. It's a poor credit course. I'm not recommending it. I'm giving you the four big box courses, and those are the four credit courses with a code that if you're going to take those four courses, one, you need to space them out over the course of the next 2 years. You don't want to take three, four credit courses in one semester. You don't need to take wills. You don't need to take tax. Those are the foundational unrequired courses that students traditionally take. That's it. How many of you do not know what you're doing this summer? Don't have plans yet? Everybody's all set? Okay. If you, because the externship program is also available over the summer, and so you can do an externship over the summer. You can max out, however. You can only take, I think, two externships over the course of your law school career. So you should think carefully about getting two really good ones. And in the crim law area, there are some that are better than others. The Public Defender Service here in D.C., where I used to work, where Professor Davis used to work, is a very good externship, and they have different divisions within that office. One of the things that I did when I was the director is I hired the woman who now runs the externship program, not as a master plan or anything. She actually, her name is Jennifer Thomas, and she used to be here in our career services office. I hired her away, and she runs that program, and so she can give you some good information. But the Public Defender Service here, and again, I don't say this because I used to run that office, it is the best public defender agency in the country. And if you want to know why, we can have a different conversation where I can go into detail. But that's one opportunity. The U.S. Attorney's Office here in D.C., unlike U.S. attorneys, those are federal prosecutors, unlike U.S. Attorney's Office just about everywhere in the country, the U.S. Attorney's Office here in D.C., they prosecute in what is the equivalent of state court. Most federal prosecutors are prosecuting only in federal court and only RICO and large drug cases. But murder, rape, and robbery, those are state court cases. But in D.C., because D.C. is not a state, the prosecution of those crimes are done by the federal U.S. Attorney's Office. So that's a great place to work for an externship and for a permanent job. And so that's a good place to get an internship. Before you graduate, as you're doing internships, I would highly, 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 highly recommend doing a judicial internship with a judge. Now, we have judges who are alums on federal courts. We have judges in Montgomery County who teach in our trial ad program. And students, our alums, are working for all of these judges all over the place. But in the D.C. Superior Court, which is our local court down at Judiciary Square, the judges are on rotations. Every December, they move from either criminal, civil, family, probate. So you would know at the beginning of the semester what kind of cases that judge is going to handle. So you would sort of sign up and get an externship with the judge and then find out the judge is now suddenly doing probate and tax. You're like, oh, I wanted to see murder cases. In D.C., they would know in December where they're going to be for the entire year. And you can just go on to D.C. Superior Court and then look at the criminal division. And in general, if you're going to do an externship at the D.C. Superior Court, and again, I highly recommend it, you want to do an externship with a judge who has a felony one or felony two calendar, not misdemeanors, not community court or drug court, because you're not going to get the kind of legal experience that you need to get. So a felony one or a felony two calendar will be most important.
A couple of comments about externships. Professor Jones has been talking now about D.C. Superior Court, but don't rule out federal courts. You can extern for a federal judge as well. I think that's really important. As for when to do a judicial externship, I would say third year or second summer, not during the second year, because you don't know enough early on to be of real help to a judge. to help a judge who's got a criminal calendar when you have barely taken a couple of weeks of criminal procedure, I think limits what the judge is going to give you to work on. So I would hold that off. One other comment here. I'm not sure, I may be wrong, I'm not sure that you're limited to two externships. I know that you are limited to, for bar purposes, to 12 credits of non-classroom courses. So part of an externship, the field placement in an externship counts as non-classroom, although the seminar component counts as classroom. So the things that count as non-classroom would be the field placement or independent research or moot court or journal. And the total of those credits cannot exceed 12 credits. But I don't think you're limited to the number of externships per se.
Thank you.
But I may be wrong.
Right.
But I'm not wrong about the fact that you shouldn't take Wills and Travis. not even correct.
The one other thing, and then I'll just go ahead and open it up to everybody, is the crim law faculty, Professor Robbins and Davis and Taslitz and Jenny Roberts and I, we presented a proposal, and we are going to launch in the fall a Criminal Justice Policy and Practice Institute. And that institute will launch this fall. Several different components and things the institute will do, but primarily the institute will focus on the study of criminal law and helping law students be prepared to practice. That's our focus. And so you will see a lot of events. There'll be opportunities for you to participate in helping us plan things. There are, you probably already know about the Criminal Law Brief and the Criminal Law Society. Those are the student organizations, and they'll be a part of the Institute. But over the course of the summer, the criminal law professors will be preparing a series of events for you guys, for students who are interested in criminal law. So look for information about the Institute. There'll be ways for you to sort of sign up to be on the website and mailing list about institutions. And I know that Professor Taslitz, who is the director of the Institute, will be looking for Dean's Fellows for the Institute this summer. So if you want, in addition to your regular job or externship in the summer, if you wanted to earn additional money, he would probably be advertising for that shortly. And if not for the summer, all of us will be looking, or may still be looking in the fall for Dean's Fellows. So that'd be another opportunity to do that. So I don't want to overwhelm you with information too much more, but I would be interested to hear your questions. And I think in the back you had a question for a while.
Yeah, I just had a question about, we were talking about evidence before. Do you know much about any of the professors who teach evidence? Is there anyone specifically that you recommend?
I know some stuff. Professor Taslitz is very good, and he will be teaching in the fall. I am also very good, but I will not be teaching in the fall.
She's modest. She's very, very good.
I teach. We're one professor down. I left out Jennifer Daskal. I think you see her name on the list. She's a brand new. Yes, she's a brand new professor, Jennifer Daskal. She was an attorney at the Public Defender Service in D.C., has been at the Department of Justice doing national security, and that's her area of expertise, national security law. She'll be starting next year, so she'll teach criminal procedure in the fall, and I guess she'll teach some seminar in the spring. But anyway, that's another full-time crim faculty member. But anyway, so there's Professor Taslitz, there's myself, and then there's adjunct by the name of Korea, who teaches. I don't know much good or bad about Korea. I think it's fine, but I think Professor Taslitz is nice.
Let me just follow up on that. I do know Correa, Edward Correa, pretty well. He's a practicing attorney. He's been teaching this course for 5 or 6 years. Some of my Dean's Fellows have taken the course with him, and they loved him. So you would not be making a mistake. Check evaluation. Now, Professor Jones said for Crim Pro, we've got a lot of teachers, check evaluations. I check the evaluations for you. I'm going to give you my ranking. Even though this session is being recorded, I'm going to give you, I've got tables.
I didn't know it was going to be
okay, so here's my list. My first level list is And these are, any of these three would be, you'd be lucky to get Davis, Jones, Tessa. That's tier one. Tier two, and it's a very close difference between tier one and tier two, is Bear Barbera, the same husband-wife judge team that teaches Crim Pro 2, also teaches Crim Pro 1. The only reason I'm putting them at level two is that they are teaching the part-time section. And full-time students cannot register for the part-time section during pre-registration. After, probably right about the end of April, after all the part-time students have had the opportunity to register for that course, it will open up to anyone else. Okay, so I'd say first level, Davis Jones Taslitz, then Bear Barbera. But if you want to wait for Bear Barbera, get a placeholder, take someone else to make sure that you get into the course. Then I would put Professor Daskal. The only reason I would put her next, rather than higher, is that she has not yet taught the course. And just as a rule of thumb, I would say, never, if you can avoid it, never take a course with someone who has never taught that particular course before. Okay? I do know two of the three others, and I would say, I'm not going to say anything further about them. Okay? Try to get the names that I mentioned in approximately that order.
Yeah. I find myself in kind of a weird position because I want to compete in mock trial in the fall, and I need to have evidence and trial add at the same time. You said that it would be preferred not to take evidence in the summer, but also not to take them in conjunction. So I'm trying to decide. I was planning on taking evidence maybe in the summer, and then, but I haven't decided which one to do.
Who's teaching it in the summer?
Corey.
Yeah. Take it.
Then that would be good. There are people, routinely they come to the faculty members and say, do you want to teach evidence over the summer? And it's kind of a weird question to me because it's always like, the choices are not teach anything and get the summer off, or teach evidence. And I have to make a judgment, and I usually say I'm not going to teach anything over the summer, get summer off. So sometimes the adjuncts who teach over the summer are not particularly good, and then teaching it in the compressed manner makes it even worse. However, when you have an experienced teacher, I think it would be fine to take it over the summer. One other thing I would add to the list, I think one person that is teaching criminal procedure over the summer, who generally has not received high course evaluations, is teaching this summer.
Great. Is that the Monday, Wednesday?
I'm in the same position as her, but I don't want to take evidence over the summer with my internship, so would you just highly, highly not recommend taking them together, or can it be done?
No, it can be done, and it is done, and students do it. I don't think it's the best way to go. I think you have a better experience, like learning what to object to and what to say if you've had evidence first, but it absolutely can be done. If I had a choice, I would do evidence first over the summer, and then take a trial out in the fall. Having not done that, you can absolutely do them both in the fall.
I have two questions. Okay, first one is I'm actually taking evidence over the summer. I'm in the same position as I want to compete in the fall for a mock trial. Mm-hmm. And we have gross. What is that?
Oh. Is are there two sections of it?
Yes.
Gross and Korean?
Yes. And the Korean one's full.
I don't know gross. Check the evaluations. I don't know if he or she has taught here before, whether there would be evaluations. If you'd rather have Korea, but you still need to take it in the summer, put down gross and see if you can switch over. And there's always a lot of open before the first class starts, or even through the first week of class.
Okay, my second question is, I'm pretty sure I want to do defense, but I'm not 100%. And talking to the career advisors, they say you need to pick now, because if you have experience with the prosecution and then defense, no one's going to want to hire you.
That's not true.
I have a feeling about that, and I'm just like,
that's what I heard, too.
No, that's not true. That's absolutely not true.
Someone needs to smack them upside the head, because they keep telling me that.
There's a waiting line for that.
So, no. no, that's not true. So what it is, God, I thought I had sufficiently dispelled that notion. Years ago, they used to advise people that. I said, stop telling people that. I think that if you know what you want to do, you should not feel like, well, I better try the other side. If you know what you want to do, then do that. We don't say to people who are interested in environmental, you know, you might want to try working for another group. If you know what you want to do, do that. If you want to be a public defender, you're absolutely sure that's where your heart is, then just go DC public defender, federal, work for a judge, do a whole bunch of things that lead to that career goal. If you're not sure, try a variety of things and then make a decision. You may say, wow, I kind of was thinking about being a prosecutor, but having worked here, this is phenomenal. This is where my passion is. Or you may work for a defender office and say, God, these people are guiltier than I thought. This is not for me. I better go.
And that's just a lawyer.
So, no, you are not sort of barred. Now, I should say, with some public defender offices, and DC public defender is probably the best example of this, they are incredibly competitive. Right? And my best example of that is when I was the director of the agency, Sandra Day O'Connor called to recommend her law clerk, who was clerking for her on the Supreme Court, and I did not hire him. 600 applications, maybe 8 positions, 100 people I ended up interviewing. That guy just wasn't the top guy. That's how competitive it is. So for that kind of area, it's going to come down to how many different public defender experiences did you amass before you came to apply for us? And if you took some time to work at a prosecutor's office or do something that wasn't death penalty, innocence, public defender, you're not going to be as competitive as the guy who spent 2 years, you know, exonerating some guy in the South. You're just not. It's only a few positions. With that minor caveat, no one is going to look twice at the fact that you worked in a different office. And while I was the director of the Public Defender Service, I hired a former Metropolitan Police Department police officer.
Because it seems
so, I didn't have a bias against her, who was locking up the people we're representing. I'm surely not going to look down at someone who spent a semester as an intern in a prosecutor's office.
Because it makes sense to have to look at both sides and be able to say, well, the prosecutor would say this, but now I'm working for a defense firm, so I can, you know, combat that.
Well, it's not so much that it makes sense, because I think that the wisdom was, you should try both. There are lots of people in the defense community and in the prosecution community who say, look, this is a calling. Right? This is your passion, and you should know. And if you feel like you could prosecute, then we don't want you defending. And if you feel like, the defendants have a point, then we don't want you in our prosecutor offices. There's that. But, so I don't think you should feel compelled to do both, because you feel like you need to get a well-rounded experience. But if you don't know what you want to do, you can do all of them, and then say, I'm making a decision, and then when someone says, wow, you're applying to be a public defender, but you spent a summer working in a prosecutor's office, you say, yeah, I wasn't sure how I wanted to best work in the justice system, use my law degree, and having spent the summer there, I decided X or blah, 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 and I don't think it's a problem. You should, one, not feel like you have to choose and can't do the other, nor should you feel like I need to do both.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
I also have two questions, and they're kind of related. First, for someone that wants to go into a career or is interested in going into a career of like appellate advocacy, and this kind of is related to your specialty, I guess, Professor Robbins, do you think that a focus on criminal law is helpful in comparison to like other concentrations in the law towards appellate advocacy? Because I feel like a lot of constitutional, particularly in constitutional issues, I feel like you could find yourself litigating often in that area, and like it's just important to note. And then the second question was related to my internship, where the internship coordinator offers the ability to elevate within the office. It's with a prosecutor attorneys in Maryland. And she said that you could elevate up through like the divisions of the crime unit and stuff like the prosecutor's unit. I was just wondering like how wise that is. It's like
elevate up during an externship.
Huh? I'm sorry.
Elevate up during an externship.
Well, no, just to continue the internship. Like so, this summer you'll stay in one department, and then you can choose to go up to the next area.
Go back for another externship.
Yeah. I mean, I want to. Okay.
The reason it seems to me it should be your goal to get as many different meaningful opportunities as possible. Unless you knew, and perhaps even if you knew, that that's the office you wanted to work in after graduation, then the more they see you around, maybe the more likely you are to get a position there. But I still say get a variety of others as well. That one for me is an easy question. The other one, though, I have to turn it back on you. When you say you want to be an appellate lawyer, that's a category, but an appellate civil lawyer or appellate criminal lawyer, that's a big difference. There are large prosecutor's offices, large defender offices that have specialized appellate attorneys. There's a graduate of this school, graduated about 95 or so, former research assistant of mine, Benjamin Lacey, who went to the Manhattan, New York prosecutor's office and did drug crimes for about 15 or 20 years, and now he's their senior appellate attorney. All he does is criminal appeal. That's a nice path if that's what you want. But if you're saying you want to do appellate, you don't care whether it's civil or criminal, then maybe we should talk further outside of this session.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, just a couple things. One, when you're picking an externship, you're offering them free labor. Right? This is work that they otherwise would have to pay someone to do. But the exchange is you're getting valuable experience. So it's like, unless this is helping me and making me a better lawyer and a better writer and a better advocate, I'm just giving up free labor and I'm not getting anything in return. So if you went to an office and you fell in love with it, they fell in love with you, it was what you wanted to do, and they said we're going to have a position open, then maybe I would say, do the summer and maybe do one more time. But the bottom line is you've gotten your bang for your buck after one externship there. They know you, they liked you, that they wanted you to come back. You know, they're not going to like you more. It's like, wow, you were great. Now go and get some other experience at even a related office. You know, go do appellate litigation somewhere else. So when you come back to apply to them at other places, you come with the whole package and not just, pretty much all you did was Montgomery County Prosecutor's Office is this division, Montgomery County Prosecutor this office, Montgomery County Prosecutor, and then they had a hiring freeze by the time you graduated and they couldn't hire you. And it's like, well, you kind of only like a one trick pony.
The next logical step would be go intern for a judge.
Right. Especially an appellate judge. That would be a great thing to bring to the table, especially if you fall in love with that office and you say, I want to be in Montgomery County, I want to do appellate litigation in this office, work for an appellate judge who practices or who presides over cases in Montgomery County. You bring that to the table. And then work for a federal judge and do a variety of things so you come with a more complete package.
Basically, what we're saying is just do externships and don't do law school.
In addition to law school. So there's an appellate advocacy course. There are Fed courts would be a great course to take if you're interested in appellate advocacy, because that's going to cut across a wide range of issues. There are alums, and one of the things our institute is going to do beginning in the fall for people who are interested in criminal law is to connect you with alums who are doing exactly what you want to do. And we've been talking to them. Professor Robbins and Professor Davis sort of got together a list of now over 200 alums across the country who are prosecutors, who are defenders, and policy people, and appellate people. And one of the things we want to do beginning in the fall is sort of set up these mentor networks. So you can shadow them, you can talk to them about externships, what they do, answer questions about did you decide between defense and prosecution. I think that's critical that you have somebody to do that with. And so look out for that when we start doing that in the fall. I think that would be helpful.
Other questions?
So WCL seems to have a strong focus on the defense side. If you're interested in being a prosecutor, what kind of courses do you recommend taking other than TASLs, if I said his name correctly? Are there any other avenues that you recommend taking?
There is a course that closes out quickly. It's already closed out. It's called The Role of a Federal Prosecutor. It's taught downtown at the Justice Department. They take 5 students from each of the local law schools. Always they are 3Ls, so watch for that when you're a 3L. Take an externship at a prosecutor's office, take an externship with a judge. But other than that, I mean...
There's a guy named, I think his name was Jeffrey Winger, W-E-N-N-E-R. He was at the... He is a Montgomery County prosecutor, and he teaches 2 courses for prosecutors. prosecutors. One is sort of like the ethical issues that a prosecutor, I don't forget what the other one's called, but it's definitely W-E-N-N-E-R-A-R. He's a great source. And whether you're a prosecutor or a defender, even if you want to be a prosecutor, you can learn a lot from defense attorneys. but also, too, immigration law, it's going to be an issue whether the immigration consequences of what plea you offer as a prosecutor and what plea you advise your client to take. The other issue that is, I used to say it was an emerging issue, but it is a very omnipresent issue in the practice of criminal law, is forensic science. So DNA, there's a course on main campus that you should look at on DNA and forensic science. I think it's taught by a prosecutor and a police officer. That, I think, is very important to take if you're interested in being a prosecutor. But I would agree with Ira that taking classes, not just with prosecutors, but taking classes in a wide range of topics, and for everybody, criminal defense or prosecution, working with a judge.
In your 3-letter year, consider taking the criminal prosecution clinic, where you will work with prosecutors in Montgomery County.
And other counties too.
And definitely consider taking criminal trial advocacy. Evidence first, criminal trial advocacy. It's offered every semester, but we overload on criminal trial advocacy first semester and civil second semester. All of our trial advocacy classes are co-taught by a judge, sitting or retired, and a practicing lawyer. Some of the sections of criminal trial advocacy are a judge and a prosecutor, or a judge and the Attorney General of Maryland, Doug Gansler. So watch for those. Definitely consider taking.
And for purposes of getting the trial skills, the actual skills, it doesn't matter whether it's civil or criminal. So I would not take trial ed because it's civil. Get the skills. You can also then, in the next semester, take criminal. You should take criminal before you graduate, but don't shy away from civil. The more experience you have on your feet arguing the issues, whether it's criminal or civil, the better.
Let's make this the last question because I hear a lot of people outside.
Okay, sir, I'll make it quick. You were saying to take Wills Trust of States. You were saying not to. What is the reason for not taking it, and is it on the bar?
Okay, a couple of things. Number one, never take a course just because it's on the bar. That's the purpose of the barring course. Number two, if you're in this room because you have an interest in criminal law, by definition, you don't have an interest in being an estate planning lawyer. Maybe if you take a course in family law, you could give people fair advice in family law. It, just because you take a course in wills and trusts, doesn't qualify you to write people's wills. I wrote my first will in 1986, for all sorts of reasons. I'm glad that will has never been tested. I had a real lawyer do it 10 years later. Add to that, number three, our strongest teachers at the law school are not.
And I would just add that I don't believe you should spend 3 years preparing for the bar, right? You can't just spend 3 years doing it. Nor do I believe you should spend 3 years ignoring the fact that there's this big exam that you have to pass to get your license. So I took some courses that I did not want to be reviewed. I didn't know anything about business, so I took more business courses so that when I got to the bar review, it was actually a review. I wasn't learning it for the first time. So you should balance out a little bit. So I and I differ a little bit there in terms of courses you should take in law school. In the end, you're not going to be able to fit everything in, but hopefully we've given you guys some basis for planning and organizing and sequencing. And again, if you have follow-up questions, please feel free to contact me or contact us.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Good luck.